Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Mysteries with the History, where I'll take you on a wild ride into the unknown, the strange, and the mysterious. Like you, I have questions, and like you, I want answers. A little side note, I'm in the middle of a really loud thunderstorm right now, so you might hear it from time to time, and I'm really hoping my power doesn't go out, but if I disappear off the air, you know what happened. It was not the Men in Black. It really was just the bad Wi-Fi connection. I would like to say hi to everyone that's in the live chat. Corey, Jamie, Astro, Ben. How is everyone doing? Oh my gosh, Alien Girl. So good to see you, Amy. Spaghetti Lee, Andres. Oh my gosh, Zero Cool, Exofa. It is so good to see everyone here for this very interesting topic. So before we get started, I'm going to give a quick disclaimer and a preface to the show topic. And the question is, well, why are you going to do that, Christina? Because since announcing this show, I have had several messages, which I would kind of call disturbing, from individuals who revere Bob Lazar as being some kind of icon or beacon of disclosure truth. And I've been told that I better not be critical of him or else, and also told that his claims are 100% legit, as well as being told I should only do the show about him if I have Jeremy Corbell as a guest so that I don't look like a fool. Well, I'm sorry, and I'm always impartial, pragmatic, and unbiased with all of these episodes. When I look at a topic, I look at it from as many angles as possible, trying to tease out all the relevant details, facts, and evidence for you, the viewers, to make up your own minds. I don't give my opinion because my opinions are only relevant to the person with the opinion. Everyone else has their own perspective, and I'm totally on the fence with his claims and neutral, but definitely want to learn more about this story. Furthermore, I do not do these shows for a particular group of people such as believers or non-believers. Rather, I do it for those who are new to the UFO topic and are trying to make sense out of all the many facets and dimensions that present themselves in relation to the mysteriousness involved. As you can see in the live chat, I'm running a poll to see what all of you guys think. So make sure to click on that and I will announce the results at the end of the show. We have a lot to go through today, and I'm hearing the thunder in the background. So I'm going to try and keep an eye out for any questions in the live chat, but supporting the show with super chats will pop up on my console a lot easier to see. So just FYI. Okay, so with all that being said and out of the way, let me bring on my special guest co-host, Mr. Jimmy Church of the world-renowned Fade to Black Radio. Let's bring him in. But he looks a little distracted backstage, but let's see. Hey, Jimmy. Who are you talking to?
Had to clear this show.
Well,
clear this show, but we're in the clear.
Well, I want to tell you welcome. And before we even start on the topic, I want to say happy birthday to you when it's coming up this Sunday. How old are you turning, Jimmy?
29.
No, I'm telling you, you look good. You look good, pal. Yeah,
29. All those supplements and Rivergoon coffee. But birthday is Sunday. And I'm having, a party with some pretty cool people. And I'm not, that's all I'm going to say right there. We will eventually post and live stream and do all of that stuff throughout the festivities on a Saturday night. It's going to be great.
And I'll keep my eye out for pictures on Twitter.
Yeah. It's going to happen.
I see it all.
That's inevitable. Some of these guests are Twitter happy. So there you go. But yeah. It comes around once a year, you know, and
just casually.
I like to have fun with it, and they seem to be happening faster and faster. I don't know what's up with that. So I heard your disclaimer, Christina, and hello to everybody in the chat. What is cracking? I heard your disclaimer, and for you to feel the need for that kind of sucks. I think you're right. Some of these subjects are polarized, and there's just this parting of people, and you have these two extreme sides, and but you need to, you said it right. Fall somewhere in the middle, listen to everything, listen to both sides, and present both sides, and move forward. Leave it up to everybody else to make up their own minds. We're not, I certainly am not, when I say we, I'm speaking for you and the rest of the world. You can't change people's minds. We're not here to change people's minds. It's impossible. You can't do that. And if you present evidence for or against something, no matter how great this evidence is, whatever the individual's belief system is, that evidence strengthens their position. That's all it does. It doesn't change anybody's mind. And that's it. So that's a really good, really good presentation and disclaimer for you, but it just sucks that people have to hear it because it shouldn't really matter. But Bob Lazar is definitely somebody out there that is polarizing, and I've had my experience with that. I have a hair. You ever have a hair on your microphone?
Yes, and it sticks more often than I want to admit.
Right, and you step up to it and it touches, and you're like, man, dude, what? And you never get it off. You know, it always, like in your sunglasses, you know, you got a hair in your sunglasses and you put them, you're driving and you're trying to pull, you know, and it's still there. It's still, man, you're like, meh. Yeah,
I know it too well. I have a lot of hair. And this topic, there's a lot of little bits and pieces to the story. And hopefully we'll be able to go through the pros and the cons of the story. Neither of us are going to be leaning towards one side or the other, but instead just trying to relay as many facts as possible. Do you want to kind of give the summary of the story, or shall I?
Well, normally we start off with you, because you're so pragmatic, you're so black and white, you're so honest, and you just go straight down the middle, and you just, yeah. So let's let you continue the tradition. Who was Bob Lazar, Christina?
All right, so here's just a very quick outline of the Bob Lazar story. So back in 1989, this is when the general public first heard his name. He was first an alleged physicist at Los Alamos National Laboratory after graduating with a master's degree at MIT. Later, he was asked to join a project that looked at advanced propulsion by the government after being recommended by Edward Teller, who was the father of the hydrogen bomb. He claimed that he had worked at a very secretive installation called S4, built into the side mountain near Area 51 for about 6 to 8 months. There, he allegedly saw several crafts that appeared to be extraterrestrial in origin and was hired to attempt to reverse engineer a power reactor on at least one of them out of the several that he saw. After a time, he had stopped being called in by his supervisors because he had stated on multiple interviews that he worked very odd hours and very odd days. So he would only come in when he was called to come in. But at one point, when the supervisors stopped calling him, he began to feel very fearful. So we started taking people, such as his friends, out to see some kind of craft that usually showed up on Wednesday nights. He then talked to George Knapp, who broke his story on the 5 o'clock news on the KLAS TV, and it is now because of Knapp and Lazar that the public know about Area 51 and has become such a mainstream curiosity, being featured in movies and TV shows today. So that's a very, very, very basic outline of the story, but there's a lot of holes and things that I didn't cover in this very brief introduction that I hope we can address as much as we can later today to kind of understand what's going on and to help ourselves and the viewers come to their own conclusions to believe, to want to believe Bob Lazar's story or not. There we go.
Well, okay. That was a pretty good bio. I would jump in and say that that bio sounds like it was written by Jeremy Corbell, as opposed to now.
I wrote it.
But oh, you work for Corbell. Now we know.
See, this don't spread rumors, Jimmy. See, this is how it starts.
This is okay now. I followed Bob from the absolute very beginning, and I for 30 years, I was right there. I was right there with Bob. Okay, 30 years, and we're now in 2021. Things started to shift for me just recently, a couple of years ago. But if you go and listen even to the first 4, 5, or 6 years of Fade to Black, you will hear my comments about Bob and what my position was. But that being said, we need to back up a little bit, because in the beginning, and I'm talking about 1989, 1990, 1991, 92, in through that period, that 3-year period, a lot of things surfaced with Bob. There was a series of videos that were done that were excellent. I'm going to circle back to that. There was another video of him at the Little Ailey Inn outside of Area 51. They set up a military tent, and they had a little conference there, and he did an amazing question and answer after that conference with the audience. So that combined with everything that George Knapp was doing back then, and of course, you know, Gene Huff, who helped him make those original series of videos, but they did a lot of stuff in the desert together. Gene and how he was pulled into this all happened through John Lear. So if we go back to the beginning, the facts that have been presented that I think are pretty clear. Bob was living in Las Vegas. Gene Huff knew Bob. Didn't.
And for those that don't know Gene Huff, can you just give like a brief description of who he is?
Gene Huff was in realty. And one of the things that he did was he would give estimates. He was like a home inspector, and he would give estimates on property values and things like that for people that were buying and selling homes. So that was his basic gig in Las Vegas. And he gets called over to John Lear's house, and John is doing something financially with his home. I don't know, second mortgage or something like that. Needs the value assessed on his home, and Gene comes over to do this, and his assistant is Bob Lazar. Okay. And so Bob is running the tape measures, right? They're measuring these room sizes, and that is the genesis. That is the beginning. That is the progenitor of everything that followed. Of course, we all know about John Lear, great guy. Still with us. He's no longer in that home. He has moved out of it. But a very colored career history. And of course, very opinionated on the subject of UFOs and all things paranormal and strange and supernatural. Was officially a pilot for the CIA and did a lot of crazy things in and out of Lebanon. So aside from that, that's who John Lear is. So now Gene Huff and Bob Lazar get together, and the three of them are in the same place at the same time for the first time, and that's at John Lear's house. Now, what transpired after that is part of mythology and folklore and the stories, and you've got John's version of it, you got Gene's version of it, you certainly have George Knapp's version of it. But what Bob did before that, the stuff that is in public knowledge, which I think needs to be stated, we know officially that he attended down the street from me. He was from the San Fernando Valley. I believe he lived in, like, you know, Reseda, you know, that area of the valley, and attended Pierce College. Mm-hmm. And now Pierce College is a small community college here in the valley. You know, you can go there and get your 2-year degree, I guess, and things like that. But it's a small community college. Cool place. Drive by it all the time. It's right there. There's Pierce. And but it's funny how Pierce is part of this story because it's in my neighborhood. And it's part of where I've grown up. You know, it's Pierce College. You know, it's right there. He went to elementary school there, junior high school, and high school in that area. And that's where he grew up. And if you go back and look at some of the historical stuff, he did some very interesting things back in the day. Like, he was tying, strapping rocket engines to his Schwinn bikes and tearing up Etiwanda Boulevard. I'm making that up. I don't know if it was Etiwanda, but that's a street that goes through. So, and his interest in rocketeering and rockets and powered vehicles certainly started at a very young age. And all of that is part of the facts and the historical record. Now, where it went from there is kind of anybody's guess, because also here in the neighborhood. Now, this is where when I first heard of Bob Lazar and I started following the story and I'm getting the videos and I'm watching the stuff. This is in 1990-91. Caltech is also part of this community. And I lived a number of years in Pasadena. I had a lot of friends that went to Caltech, and it's right there. JPL was founded. NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory was founded out of Caltech. And JPL and those laboratories are also in Pasadena. And so there's a lot of rocket scientists. There's a lot of physicists. There's a lot of smart people that are just there in the neighborhood. It's a small community. And Caltech is part of that. And it's not surprising to me for Bob to mention attending Caltech, because it's part of the community here. It's, you know, it's the San Gabriel Valley. It's down the street. And in Pasadena, Caltech, you have Pierce College over here and the valley over here. Very small. You can drive to all of these places very, very quickly. They're just miles apart. And technically, they're just all the same community. In that, Caltech is in Pasadena. JPL is in Pasadena. This is next to Glendale, which is next to Burbank, which is next to where Bob Lazar lived, which is next to Pierce College. And there's nothing separating, you know, there isn't vast amounts of land or things in between. No, it's all concentrated and in a very small area. So that being said, Bob ventured out and wound up in a couple of places, Las Vegas, and of course, Los Alamos in New Mexico. What we do and don't know are a few things. We know that Bob was on the cover of, you know, whatever the Los Alamos Times or whatever the newspaper was. It's all from memory. You know, I'm not writing notes. But there he is with his rocket-powered car. I think it was like a Honda Civic.
Jet-powered.
Right. Strapped a jet engine to the back of this thing and lit a match.
It goes about 200 miles per hour. I mean, it was an insane story. And that's how we ended up meeting Ed Teller, was because Ed was reading the newspaper and Bob Lazar's face was on the front cover. And he walks up to him and says, "Hi, you know, that's me.
Now, apparently, all of this actually happened. I believe the story is Teller is sitting on a park bench at Los Alamos. He's got the newspaper out. Bob is standing there, sees Ed and says, "Hey, Ed, you know, that's me on the cover." "Oh, really? That's cool, young man." So we know that that actually transpired. There was a lot of mail that went between Teller and others trying to confirm this, and how Teller knew Bob and the recommendations for this position at Area 51, and so forth. There's all of this is in dispute, but I think that we can confirm that yes, Bob met Ed Teller on a park bench when Ed was reading the newspaper that had Bob on the cover with his jet car. So there you go. So there are certain things that are in place and part of the historical record. I don't know about the Caltech stuff. We'll circle back to that. But anyway, all of this leads to Bob eventually having a photo processing company. I think he had some machines, you know, that developed film and printed pictures. And he did that in Las Vegas. And I think that's what he listed as his job and things in Las Vegas, that he was a photo processor. And how he went from that to assisting Gene Huff, that's another part of the story. I think we need to, you know, probably hear from Gene or Bob directly as to exactly how that connection happened. But eventually, this lands Bob in Las Vegas, leads him to Gene Huff. He's helping Gene measure houses for these estimates, and then winds up over at the home of John Lear, and that's where the story starts, the Area 51 part.
And that's where it begins to get really interesting. So after he's recommended by Ed Teller to kind of join this program, which it was very, very vague in the description, and that was to look at alternate propulsion, he agreed to it because he's, since a very young age, been incredibly interested in technology. So he went through a lot of briefings, and I don't remember how many he went through, but he said a ton. And after he had received the job, after they passed him, gave him clearance, he was given a lot of information. I mean, and he says at least pages upon pages of information, which a lot of it seemed incredibly bizarre to him, especially in the 1980s, which, talking about UFOs and Zeta Reticuli star system, are things that you don't really talk about. And that's what these papers were saying when he got the job. Later on, when he was doing interviews, one of them being with Joe Rogan, he stated that when he was reading this information, he had this mindset of, so this information can possibly be true. The other bits and pieces probably aren't true, because he understood, while working for the government, there's always going to be some kind of disinformation, so that if someone leaks information, the people, the military, know exactly where it's coming from if they're relaying information that isn't necessarily true. Mm-hmm. So it seems like, based off of what Bob Lazar stated in his more recent interviews with Joe Rogan, because I saw most of them, but in this one in particular, he kind of took this information with a grain of salt, kind of like, yeah, I mean, Zeta Reticuli, okay, yeah, aliens, cool. But he stated that he never really had an interest in aliens, and he still doesn't, even after seeing these crafts that didn't look like they were from Earth, which I found very interesting.
Yeah, and and all of that causes me to react and go into another direction with this. But let's back up. And I'm looking at some of the comments here. I will address all of this. Jamie Patton says, actually, it was his business office. They were that were raided looking for Element 115. No, that's not true. They weren't looking for Element 115. But I will circle back and address this directly. When you do the deep dive into Bob, you need to get past the woo-woo stuff that's on the top and take a step down. But Jamie, I will come back and I will address this because this was part of the turning point with me and Bob a couple of years ago. Let's talk about the good side of Bob. If we back
and then
up,
the bad side.
To balance it out. I don't know if there's a bad side to Bob. I would say that Bob has probably got outside influences on him that aren't probably in his best interest. But let's back up.
We'll talk about it.
With the original videos that he posted, and they were just fantastic. I watched them. If I say hundreds of times each, it sounds like I'm exaggerating, but I probably did. And there were times where I would watch them back to back to back to back to back all day long. And I studied them and I was just amazed. But if you go back and you watch those original videos, and including the video at the Little Alien at that conference, and including the series of stuff that was shot not only by Gene Huff, but George Knapp. If you go back and look at those videos, the one thing that I repeatedly analyzed was I was waiting for Bob to slip up. And the story was just too cool. It was too perfect. It was just too amazing. And he was so well-spoken. And some of them he's whiteboarding and he's drawing things and he's talking about physics and things and gravity and I was just blown away. And it wasn't the facts, because I'm not a scientist. I'm talking about when I was waiting for him to slip up, was incorrectly say a word, pause too much, say the word it, like I just did. And waiting for that, where you get the body language and you get the signals where you go, ah, okay, all right, this guy's full of crap. Well, I never got that from Bob. And those early videos, I watched them not only back then, but I watched them until 2018, 2019. Fascinated with those videos. And I suggest that anybody that wants to look into Bob Lazar, start there and go and check these videos out. They stand on their own. And the way that Bob spoke and the way that he presented himself at that time to the UFO community, people were mesmerized, just like I was. And we had somebody that was not only from the inside, but was well-spoken. He wasn't a crazy wingnut. All right? Now, the other part to this that went down was Area 51.
Right.
And
I'm sorry, Jimmy. I quickly want to clarify, you know, you're talking about the good side and the bad side, and I interrupted you on that. I just want to, like, clean up what just happened. And what I meant to say is that according to some out there, Bob has, you know, bad and a questionable angle, but it seems like, and in my perspective, you know, I don't know either way. And I want to say thank you so much for being here, first off, because you've been following the story since the absolute very, very beginning. And I think having a mindset, like being there from the beginning, you're able to see things that other people simply can't see when they're looking at deep into the past. This happened in 89 when it came out, and you've been following it, it's been 30 something years, 40 years. That's a long time.
Yeah.
So it's really amazing to have you here and to hopefully open this conversation up, and that there is no, at least I'm not leaning to one side or the other.
Well, okay. And all of that being said, I would say that what are we saying? Well, what we are saying is Bob introduced us to Area 51. Certainly in the popular culture, there was chatter about Area 51 before, but he brought it straight out into the mainstream for sure. He introduced us to Area S4 and that terminology and what and where that was, Papoose Lake, and things like, you know, the sport model. These are now just terms that are bandied about, and all of that Element 115, all of that goes right back on the shoulders of Bob Lazar, and then he went silent. So this is the other part. When Bob decided to split and virtually walk away from the UFO community, he started United Nuclear and a couple of other companies, ended up in Michigan. He floated around a little bit. And there was now he went away from the UFO community. But I thought to myself, here's a guy that, you know, he got convicted of pandering, you know, whatever that had to do and this, and he had his issues. But how could he be allowed to deal with chemistry, chemicals, things with United Nuclear and apparently have government contracts? If there was issues about his past or security clearances or anything, how would he be allowed to continue as a private citizen handling these types of materials? So that always, to me, led more credibility to Bob, you know, and why wasn't he silenced? Why wasn't he taken out? Why wasn't he put in prison? Why wasn't he sent to another island? Why was, you know, all of the, if he was revealing all of these secrets? And my response to that was always, well, if they did anything to Bob, then that verifies his story. So they kind of got to leave him alone and just let him run his mouth. Because if they run interference on him, then it really happened, right? It's the 9 flying saucers at Area 51, the anti-gravity engines and Element 115 and the flights on EG&G, Janet Airlines, out of Las Vegas in Area 51, the secret doors on the side of the mountain in Papoose Lake, and all of this stuff would be true, or at least considered to be true, and that maybe Bob is not lying if the government ran interference. And now they let him alone with that, and he's running United Nuclear and takes off and was doing his thing with some pretty high level contracts and clients and a client base. So I always thought Bob was pretty solid. There were, and I'll hand this back over to you. There were a lot of people that looked into Bob's past and looked into his claims, and the mountain of stuff that was there that he said himself, you leave yourself wide open to some very smart people that are going to look into you. Fantastic claims. You're very visible, and people are going to do just that. And of course, high on that list was Stanton Friedman, and Stanton would not back down on this. Now, I'm not going to dwell on this for any length of time. But I butted heads with Stanton over Lazar a couple of times, and a couple of those were very public. And one time I was hosting a panel, and Stanton is on that panel. And I remember Stanton saying something about a propulsion system and things and how this thing could run in. And he said a couple of things, and I just turned around and go, well, it sounds pretty similar, Stan, to what Bob Lazar was talking about. And Stanton's head spun around. And I went, okay, obviously I just went into a zone I had no right going into in front of all of these people. And I just got B-slapped by Stanton Friedman in front of 1,500 people. And it kind of sucked. he pulled me aside later, Stanton, and said, "You took that pretty well." I said, "Well, it was vicious." But Stanton and I ended up talking many times over the years about Bob. And Stanton's position, and we'll get into the fact side of this, Stanton's position on it was solid. Stanton's evidence and the way that it piled up was solid. And for Stanton, that was good enough. It was case closed. And I always took the other position with Stanton on this, you know, saying, "Well, what about this? What about this? You know, they could have. Stanton had an answer for all of that. But I was still on the Bob Lazar train at that time. And so that's kind of where we are. Now, we haven't talked about the other side of this. So I'm going to hand this over to you. The other side, which it starts to get interesting really, really quickly, of course, that everybody points at first, is his education. Now, you said in the in your opening description about Bob that he got an advanced degree from Caltech. What evidence have you found to support Caltech for Bob?
Well, when it comes to MIT, it's only verbal confirmation that he did go there. Now, there are no records of him attending that university. So that's why I said allegedly. I didn't actually state he went to MIT because we simply don't know. There is no paperwork to back up his claim. And before we continue, there are a few super chats I want to address and say thank you to. First one being Too Much Information is now a member of YouTube. Thank you so much. That is super awesome. And Exofa, thank you for the thank you for the super chat and for £10. Thank you. It says, "I read obscure interview, Lazar and movie writers. He claims guard dogs had vocal cords removed, saw books that contain holographic x-ray photos of primitive humans plus mud huts. Alien calls us containers." That's a lot of information. And I have not heard any of these claims.
Okay. Let's MIT and Caltech. Let's talk about this. You, young lady, are a college student. Correct? I saw your post last week. I finally got all my assignments done, right? I was like, okay, she got it done on time. All this other UFO stuff getting in the way. But let's talk about that for a second.
Okay.
Can you name your teachers?
Nope.
Just yes or no?
Nope.
You can't name any of your teachers?
No. I just call them professor.
Okay. That's not what I'm talking about. Okay. Do you have any copies of any work that you have done at school?
Yes.
Okay. Hey, have you taken pictures with any friends in the cafeteria?
No.
At the Taco Bell down the street?
No.
Do you have friends?
Can I skip that question?
Okay, so that supports Bob Lazar then. Bob Lazar had no friends. See, this is the thing, Christina. You posted online, "I got my assignments done," right? And that was just one little snippet. But these are things that we do every day in life. We talk about our classes. We talk about work that we're doing. Our family knows what's going on. Hopefully, they know what's going on and you're not hiding too much, like your grades. But your
family. I'm passing.
Right. Your friends, your family, you know, things, your people around you, your teachers. And every day that stuff piles up. Okay. And if anything came into question 5 or 10 years from now, I think you could go, "Well, I got this. I've got this over here. I've got this picture here that we took last week. I've got this. I've got this. I've got this. I've got this." Bob hasn't been able to produce anything. Now, I look at myself, and I always gave him a pass card on all of this, but I look at myself if I'm talking about a band that I've worked with or a job that I've had or a thing that I did or a magazine or an album or this, you know what? Pretty much, if it's not already out in the public domain, I can produce something. Okay. I can. And it doesn't matter what it is. I didn't attend some big university, but I did a lot of extension classes, and I did this, and I did went to this recording school or this or that. I've got diplomas, certificates, things, pictures, videos, things that go back 20, 30 years. Okay. I still have certificates of completion from UCLA Extension going back to 1989.
Oh, dang.
Bob surfaced. And I just save all that stuff, right? And with Caltech or with MIT, you had better have something. You've got papers that you have written. You have tests that you have taken. You have approvals and professors and guidance and things, right? We're talking about physics here. I'm not talking about a metal shop in junior high school. I'm talking about physics at Caltech. There is an immense paper trail. Well, they erased his records. They didn't erase his friends. Didn't somebody take a picture? Didn't somebody sign something? Didn't he attend a class with a buddy that they did? Class assignments, whatever, something. You have one friend in school, Christine. You have one. You just have one. You just said that. You've got maybe one friend, but you've got that one friend that would step up and go, Christine is cool. Yeah, we go to school together. Yeah, yeah. As a matter of fact, she's not a vegetarian. She eats red meat and Reese's peanut butter cups every single day. You have that person that can say that about you. Bob never did that. And you would think in his position that this would have been brought forward and he could just move on from this. It never happened. I gave him a pass card on it because of those videos and everything else. And I just let everybody else kind of fight about this, that there must be something more nefarious at a boot here, and there's something else going on. But wouldn't you want to clear your name, right?
Of course.
Yes. And would you be able to do that? Yes.
Yes.
Yes, you personally.
Yes. So
that was the issues. Now, a couple of other things, which is this. His the video got fully analyzed that was shot, the video that I love, at Area 51. And somebody at Area 51 in the audience said, hey, who's your professor at Caltech? And he blurts out a name. And whatever his name was, you know, it was Robert Baumgartner. I'm making it up. Bartholomew, whatever. And so he blurts out this name. And people take note. They write that down. And it turned out that that professor at Caltech that he loved was like his electronics teacher in seventh grade in junior high school. Right? And it's just like, you know, and it was the same name, you know, Bartholomew Cummin Bidgenwigget, you know, whatever his name was, Cumberbatch. And that name doesn't get confused. Either he was your electronics teacher in junior high school or not, but I doubt that there is an electronics teacher teaching at a junior high school in Topanga that is also a physics teacher at Caltech or MIT or whatever. And these were things where if you are going to blurt this out, you need to be right about this. You need to be correct.
Yeah, you do. You absolutely do. Otherwise, it's gonna burn you. There are a few super chats I want to address. First, I want to say thank you again to Too Much Information for being a channel supporter for Exofa. And then we have Strange Recon. It's so good to see you here, man. It says, you think I'm gonna let Exofa be the only supporter? Keep up the good work. Strange Recon supports mysteries with a history. Thank you. And then Aaron, thank you so much for the super sticker. you're awesome. All of you guys are really fantastic. And then we have Bottled Water. Good to see you, man. Oh, I lost it. Oh, let me find
Christina
it.
Christina has friends.
Christina has friends. We're just a little odd.
Yeah, obviously. Your parents, you know. So what should we name her? Should we name her Wendy? Or should we name her? I got it. Bottled Water. Yes, let's go with that. Let's go with Bottled Water. That's awesome. Well,
I almost had the most generic Spanish name, and that was going to be Maria. But then my mom was like, absolutely not. There cannot be another Maria in this world. But then we have John Music. Thank you. And it says, Fravor said he and his wife hung out with and are friends with Lazar and his wife. Also, we need Nap on because he said he's verified more of Lazar's accounts over time. Gut feeling says Lazar is legit. But regardless, we all have to unify for disclosure. That's interesting because I have looked at some of Nap's interviews that maybe we'll get to talk about a little bit more, but I'm gonna hold that thought, John, and we're gonna address this one by the Zatil. Did I say that right?
Jatil.
Oh, Jatil. Okay. Thank you. And it says, if he really was there, don't know why the MIT would have refused to acknowledge that or even someone he knew there. That's a very interesting claim. And there's been a few things that kind of that half and half think that they do what they do and why MIT doesn't agree with it. And then another one from Schoolcraft. Awesome name. Are you crafty too with art? Because that would be cool. And it says, in Bob's book, Dreamland, which came out in 2019, by the way, it says, there I was at age 23 working as an electronics engineer, even though I have a few credits shy of actually having a college degree. Oh, okay. Okay, that's an interesting point. I skimmed through the book and I didn't read to that part. And then we have April. Thank you. It says, don't forget to smash that like button. Oh my gosh. Thank you everyone for the super chats. Now we're going to go to a very quick intermission and then get back to all of these questions.
Hi, I'm Micah Hanks. And let me tell you something. I support Christina Gomez as a Patreon subscriber. And here's why you should too. She brings all of her unique insights to a whole new generation. And all while she's also going through college. Listen, support Christina. Become a Patreon subscriber today. You won't regret it.
All righty.
It's so interesting. Mike is talking in the wrong end of his microphone. So funny. Every time I just crack up, man. He's a radio veteran. Okay.
He's the best.
Now, I want to stay on this for a second and to be clear with everybody. I was on the Bob Lazar train for 30 years, until a couple of years ago. And I mean, fully supportive. But this is another thing where it just gets a little bit funky for me.
Okay.
How do you live on the West Coast, broke, doing your thing, and somehow attend MIT, right? And go to school and then come back here and do all of this, before a certain age where obviously there wasn't enough time there to do any of that. You need to somehow get that story together. How did you go to MIT? How did you go to MIT? Were you jumping on a plane every day in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and flying home on the weekends to work at Los Alamos, and you're going to MIT at the same time? How do you do that? Or are you doing this from Las Vegas in between, developing a film for somebody off of their Kodak Instamatic camera, and you know what? I gotta go. I got to get over to MIT. I've got it's finals week. I've got to write my dissertation. I got to publish my paper for my PhD and I'll write it on the plane, I guess. But I got to get out of here. What you need to have that story a little bit more solid. And although I dismissed that in the past, the more that I think about it, you know, with time management and how you pull things off, going to MIT and Caltech and everything else, it's not right. It doesn't feel right. Okay, so.
No, like we said, there's definitely a lot of holes into the story, but there's a lot of things that can, in a sense, back up his claims as well. Bottled water. Thank you. You're awesome. It says he built a Honda Civic with a rocket engine, but MIT has satellites, campuses, a lot of colleges do.
Yeah, he didn't say satellite colleges that, you know, the MIT satellite college in Encino, California, which I don't think exists. But I would love to know what satellite college that you can go to for MIT and get a PhD in physics. Do you know how many physics? I'm gonna post this up right now for the chat room. I want somebody to post a number. How many physicists are there in the world right now? How many physicists are in the world? Type that in. Somebody take a guess. How many people graduate with a physics degree in the United States each year? Type that in. And somebody just freak out because that number is so low.
That's a lot of numbers here.
Denza Bill said 990,000. No. No. Yeah, Sonny M is closer with 100. Okay.
Oh, but to answer your question about how we got to MIT, so Schoolcraft found a quote from Dreamland, and it says, "I was grateful to the folks at Messen for sending me to MIT to further my education."
Right. See, there it is right there. You need to be careful with this. So if that's there, what gives? Now, the numbers. Okay. 100. Nah, Jimmy, there are way more. Okay. The number is around 1,500. Spaghetti Lee typed in 2,000 in the world.
Wow.
Now, I will say this, that pretty much every physicist knows every physicist. They're all in each other's business. They know what's going on. They know what their research is. Out of 1,000 bachelor degrees, only 3.4 are for physics.
But, you know, let's.
This is a crazy thing. So if you are going to say that you're a physicist or that you're running with this crowd, they all know you. And that means Michio Kaku knows who you are, right? Neil deGrasse Tyson knows you, and you guys have hung out. Sean Carroll knows you. Brian Green knows you. You guys hang out, and that's it. You cannot. I have talked to other physicists about other physicists that I know, and they shouldn't know each other. And you ought to hear, it's like a knitting circle with your grandmother and her best friends. The gossip and the soap opera and the smack talk that goes down. They all know each other. Okay.
That's interesting. But, you know, let's look at the ramifications of his claims. You know, how many others have come forward corroborating his claims through? Because
how do you explain the physicists that claim they worked with Bob Lazar at Los Alamos? No physicist has ever claimed that they worked with Bob Lazar at Los Alamos. As a physicist, I've never heard any physicist say that they worked with Bob Lazar at Los Alamos. But maybe Bob stopped by to put in a new power supply on their computer, you know, as some kind of tech that was on staff. But he wasn't there in a physics lab. And I'll give you another example. physicists do one thing, then I'm going to swing back to the element 115 search. This is the other point. Everybody just listen to me for a second. Physicists are math. They write equations with symbols that nobody knows what's going on but other physicists. You don't know what that means on the whiteboard. You don't know if there's something incorrect. You and I don't know. We don't know. It's impressive. It's fun to look at. It's great. And I know a lot about physics from what I've read in a book, but can I run an algorithm? Can I run out a chain of stuff? Can I get into something? Can I find? No, I can't. I can't do that. And neither can Bob. You need to be able to sit down. If you're going to make these claims on anti-gravity and element 115 and gravity waves and things, you better sit down at a whiteboard and bang this stuff out for a couple of weeks and have other physicists come in and study your work. And it better be walls of equations and numbers and algorithms, because that's what physicists do. And they do it for years. Years. That's what they do. They're not in the laboratory. When they say they're in the lab, they're not in there pouring chemicals. They're in there writing equations out and computers and things and math. Bob don't do math. Right? And you just need to be able to back all of this stuff up. Okay.
Well, Dead Minds Podcast says, and thank you, by the way, it says, I'm still on the fence when it comes to Lazar, but Jimmy brings a certain real life and common sense view on it.
I am as impressed with Bob as anybody. The dude can speak. You know,
he's very articulate.
He's bad, you know, and I'm just like, I'm all in, you know, and I did it for years. Okay. Never saw Bob write out that equation though. And
well, Aaron has a question. It says, first it says, Jimmy, you're so wrong. Have you heard of an experimental physicist? Not a theoretical, experimental. How does a non-physicist mount a rocket engine on a car?
With a pair of pliers and a couple of screws. That's how you do it. Has nothing to do with physics. You buy a rocket engine and you strap it into a car and you throw some kerosene in it and you light that puppy up and maybe you're stupid enough to get behind the wheel. That's all. We've all come on, man. Stop with that. Now, but I'm glad he did it. I would love to do it. I got a Jeep. Man, we can open up the tailgate. Let's slap a J45 Pratt & Whitney in that baby. Absolutely. Put the gas tank in the front seat. I'm down. Would you ride with me? Yes, you would. See, there's nothing wrong. You don't have to be a physicist. Okay.
Christine. So, but Hold on.
Hold on.
All right.
No, actually, I'm not going to interrupt. Christina, this is your show. Okay, go ahead.
So let's go back to the ramifications of his claims. You know, how many people have come forward corroborating with his claims, though, about him and his story?
Well, from Area 51, the number would be zero from Area 51. Mm-hmm. From Los Alamos, him being a physicist at Los Alamos, the number is zero. Well, he's in the phone directory. Yeah, the janitors are in the phone directory. Everybody's in the phone directory. So that's that. The W-2 form, W-4, W-2 that he produced from the Naval Office of Intelligence or whatever is an office that doesn't even exist.
Yeah, he said the Department of Naval Intelligence when it should have been the Office of Naval Intelligence. Right. So that was like a little slip up.
Right. Oh, yeah, they messed up on the W-2. Right.
It's a little.
Stop with that. But it's the amount of money on that, too, as well. It you know, and I know that many people have done the math, but that would indicate him working out there for a few hours in a week. Whatever, 10 hours in a month, whatever. It's a very, very low number. It doesn't indicate that he was out there for a year. It doesn't indicate that he was out there for a day, a week, a weekday. It's a very strange number. You would expect it to be a bigger number to back up what he suggested that he did, right, which is multiple trips out there, test flying UFOs, looking at anti-gravity systems, walking down hallways, going over reference material, and all of this. It just seemed like a pretty low number to me. I could have it all wrong, but I when I saw the Naval Intelligence W-2, I was like, see, that's all we need. There's proof that he was there. I don't know where the rest of the W-2s are. I don't know where the rest of the money is, but he was obviously there. Now, was Bob actually at Area 51? Did he set foot on Area 51? Yeah, it's possible. It absolutely is possible. Did he board a flight, a Janet flight, out of Las Vegas McCarran and fly to Area 51 and step off of the plane? Is that possible? Yes. Entirely possible. What he did in that capacity and how he got there and all of that remains to be proven. But is that possible? Yes, I would absolutely say that that is possible. The rest of the claims, I don't know. Okay, I'll tell you.
Right, there's no real paper trail when it comes to his claims. And Exofa says Lazar claimed the craft could rotate and fly belly first. Then we saw the gimbal video, which seems to confirm. Thank you, by the way. And then Bottled Water also says, I spent nearly a decade in the military and over 2 years as a contractor, and they jack up tax documents all the time. I had to spend a week on the phone with the Army to fix a W-2 because they're dumb. Thanks, Bottled Water. that's an interesting statement. So it seems like you want to...
Except Bob never said that that W-2 was wrong. And he never said it was jacked up. No. Yes, Bottled Water, sure. Absolutely. Do mistakes happen on W-2s? Absolutely. The Office of Naval Intelligence screwed it up. I don't know. Okay, now let's swing back around. Again, I am going to say for 30 years, I took a bullet for Bob Lazar. I did. I fought this, and everybody that came at me and the evidence, man, oh geez, especially the early days of Fade to Black, the stuff that would just flood my inbox every day from, you know, literally hundreds of researchers and the amount of Bob Lazar stuff. And I chose to ignore it until the Bob Lazar movie comes out. What's it called? Area 51 and Flying Saucers, or whatever it was, the Jeremy Corbell picture. Mm-hmm. And whatever you think about the movie, it's a movie. Okay, great. That's not what I'm talking about. It's what happened in the movie that was mentioned earlier in the chat here, which said there was a raid at Bob's house, right? Okay. They were looking for Element 115. And I'm watching this in the movie, and I'm like, wow, this is pretty interesting. Why would they be raiding Bob's house? And of course, Bob and Corbell are on the phone, and Bob is, you know, they're here, man. They're raiding my house. Well, okay. So what ended up happening? And this is the facts. Has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with the murder investigation. That's right. So, Bob Lazar, United Nuclear, sells radioactive stuff on occasion. Radioactive materials, elements. Mm-hmm. And what, there's one thing out there that is pretty strange. There's always a subculture to everything. And in the radioactive periodic chart fanboy, fangirl world, is there are collectors that collect the elements on the periodic chart. Sounds pretty exciting to me, but there are people that do this. And so they get a little piece of uranium, a little piece of gold, a little piece of lead, right? A little piece of salt, you know, whatever it is, right? and they collect the elements on the periodic chart. And so, you know, radium, you know, and some of these are very, very deadly. Okay.
Right.
So there's a murder investigation. Somebody was killed. Somebody was killed by dun, 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 radiation poisoning. Right. Okay. So, during this murder investigation, and you can go and look all of this up, the court documents, the search warrants, the things, the case, it's all there. And Bob knew this. Okay. He didn't say anything in the movie. And if he did, it was edited out. But Bob knew this at the time. So, in them, they have the suspect, and now they know how this person was murdered, by what, and you know, it's radioactive. It's an element. They have the element. Well, who's selling these elements? How would they get this element? They're going through. Oh, wait a minute. They purchased something from United Nuclear.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so they get a search warrant together and they go to Bob's house. They tell him what they're there for. They go in and they're looking for a receipt from this. Bob had bought a periodic chart with all the you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Certain things, you know, you can find gold, you can find salt, you can find stuff, but there are certain things in there that are a little bit harder to find, like plutonium.
Right. Okay. So anyway,
but there's a way to do it. And Bob sold to this murder suspect some of this radioactive material that was from a collection.
Oh,
he had. And they go, they get the receipt from the suspect and they leave. That's why they were in his home. They weren't there for element 115, because 115, well, that's a whole nother discussion. But so for people to say, you know, well, you know, they searched his house, man, they raided his home, you know, they raided his home for element. No, they didn't. They raided his home to get a receipt for radioactive stuff that he sold a murder suspect who killed somebody. That's why they were there. And this is my point to all of this. Up to that, I'm on the Bob Lazar train. I'm there. And I watch this unfold. I see what's going on in Detroit. I see the murder investigation. I go and I look at all the court materials, and I see that that's what's happening. But what is actually happening is Corbell and Lazar continue to play this element 115 raid of the house game. And that is misleading. Bob knew why they were at the house, right? He knows this. Jeremy knows this. I don't know if Knapp knew it. He knows now, but at the time, I don't know. But as this went down and afterwards, and the movie's out and it's being released and the interviews are going on, and they continue with this. And that's when I had to back up and say, there's a game being played here. There's a game being played. And I have been a part of it. I have been played, right? I spent 30 years supporting Bob and all the accusations and defending him. And now this game is being played with the public. And that is where this veil was lifted on me. And I said it publicly. I'm going to let Bob do his game. They can go and do whatever they want. I just can't support it anymore. Not in good faith, knowing this. Somebody needs to come clean on this and explain the motivations. But until then, you know, and that's what ended my 30 plus year fascination with Bob Lazar. And it took a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. And I quickly want to, well, not quickly, but I want to address John's question that I think is very relevant to what you're saying. And I want to talk about it with you. And it says, Fravor said he and his wife hung out with and are friends with Lazar and his wife. Also, we need Knapp on because he says he's verified more of Lazar's accounts over time. Mm-hmm. Gut feeling says Lazar is legit. And like I briefly stated, there have been quite a few interviews where Knapp has talked about the Lazar story. But later on, as the years came forward, he stated, and when talking with Lazar on this, they kind of felt in some respects that it's very possible that both Lazar and Knapp were used as a pawn to go ahead and push out this information as being a part of some kind of agenda. Of course, these are merely gut feelings by Knapp when he did an interview with the Politico Netherlands, I think it was what it was called, and I can find it. But it was an interview in just a few years ago when talking about this. And like he said that Lazar also kind of felt the same way, but didn't really want to address that because no one wants to be used. Absolutely no one wants to be used for someone else's agenda, but it seems like that's a possibility. Now, Bottled Water states here, and thank you again, it says, Office of Naval Intelligence is the military intelligence agency of the United States Navy, established in 1882, and they have a website. So what was wrong with Lazar's paper was that it said Department of Naval Intelligence instead of office. So that was a typo on someone's behalf. Either it was fraudulent by Lazar, or maybe it could have been something else that we simply don't know.
Yeah. And what it says, I'm looking at it right here. It says United States Department of Naval Intelligence. And and it says Washington, D.C. with a zip code. That department and the way that this is worded doesn't exist. It just simply doesn't exist. And then, but this is the, hold on for a second. Let me blow this up for a second.
Yeah.
His wages were... What does this say? What does it say his wages were? It's like $900. Oh, man. Here it is. Wages, tips, $958.11.
Oh, wow. Well, and then...
$958 for a physicist hanging out, backwards engineering.
Yeah, that's a pretty insane. I mean, it's not enough. But Aaron also states, how did the FBI get a search warrant for Bob's home over a receipt? What judge grants that for a case where he sold something as part of a kit? What do you say to that?
No. That's okay. Did everybody hear what I just said? It was a murder investigation, and they found out the element and the type of radiation that was used. And they found out that the murder suspect purchased this from Bob Lazar. They needed to go to Bob Lazar's office, get the receipt to tie the murder suspect into this murder investigation. Had nothing to do with Bob Lazar. So stop. Bob Lazar was not part of it. It was a murder investigation.
Okay.
It's like they went to Target and got a receipt from Target for the axe that was purchased to chop somebody up. That's what we're talking about here. It has nothing to do with Bob Lazar.
Okay.
All right.
I'm glad he clarified that, and you did as well. And Aaron, thank you so much. And then Jazz also says, wow, Jimmy and I don't always agree on everything, but if there is any stable Muscovian out there, produce it. Aren't we looking for science?
Yes. Now, that is a great point. Okay, so Lazarium, right? Element 115, Lazarium. And when element 115 was finally identified, produced in a lab, so you're going down the periodic chart, the next one to pop up, you know, you're at 114, you got to fill this hole, the next one's going to be 115. They do that.
Right.
And so it has a half-life of, remember, it's not natural. It had to be created. You don't go and dig up element 115 in the Mojave Desert or somewhere in Nigeria, right? Whatever. That's not the case, but it was produced. But it has a half-life of like a millionth of a second. All right, something crazy. Here, I'll tell you exactly what it is right now. Element 115. You know, Wikipedia, everybody, is a really cool source. you can go and pop things in, you know, like Element 115. And it's right here. Okay, discovered. Synthesized in 2003 by a joint Russian-American scientist of the Joint Institute for Nuclear Research, JINR, in Dubna, Russia. In December 2015, it was recognized as one of the four new elements by the Joint Working Party of International Scientific Bodies, the IUPAC and the IUPAP. On the 20th of November 2016, it was officially named after the Moscow Oblast, which in which the JINR is situated. Okay, here you go. Moscovium 290 has a half-life of only 0.65 seconds. That's what it is, not a millionth of a second. 0.65 seconds. Wow. In the periodic table, it is a p-block transactide element. It is a member of the seventh period and is placed in group 15 as the heaviest, whatever, I can't say that word, although it has not been confirmed as to behave as a heavier homologue of the... Man, I can't say that. This is why Bob's not a physicist, because neither am I. I can't say these big words. I love it though. But that's it. And it says about 100 atoms of Moscovian have been observed to date. 100 atoms.
Oh my gosh.
Atoms. That's it. All of which have been known to have a mass numbers between 287 and 290. So now I think Bob said he had a bucket of it, right? I don't know how we got a bucket of element 115 out of maybe it was his lunchbox, and you know, and got it onto the bus, got it, you know, went through all of the searches, gets on the plane, flies back and then gets in his car with this bucket of element 115 in the front seat of the car and happens to get it home. All of that while making $987.11. It's pretty good. See, he got into the element 115 vault, right? Never believe Bob, but he revealed too much undeniable information to be totally disbelieved. There's too much evidence. Well, there's no evidence. But I totally agree that absolutely agree to this, that there was something going on at Area 51, and he pulls his buddies out there on Wednesday night and says, okay, everybody look over there. And they do. And stuff starts jumping off in the sky.
And they record it.
What do you do with that? There's something there. You know, I don't know, but absolutely. That happened. I have a friend of mine, Wolf McCarron, and he's a great guy, will be at my house for the party this Saturday. Wolf is the original guy, along with Bill Cooper and Bob Lazar and Gene Heff, that was out at Area 51 in 1990 filming these craft. And all of this film and video that you see from Area 51 back in the day is Wolf's video. He shot thousands of hours of video from Tikaboo Peak and the areas around there of Area 51, and he was constantly up there. Everybody knows Wolf. And so if it wasn't for Bob and identifying what was going on, my buddy Wolf wouldn't have been out there. And others filming what is going on. There's no doubt about it. There isn't. And there's something going on at Area 51 for sure. You know, and can we put a lot on Bob's shoulders with this? We absolutely can. That doesn't mean he stole element 115. That doesn't mean he saw 9 flying saucers. That doesn't mean he went through secret hangar doors on the side of a mountain in Papoose Lake in Area S4, which, by the way, I went and investigated. You can go look at Area 51. Go to Google Maps. Go and look. He says he took a bus ride with black painted out windows, and went through the security gate, went through the hangar doors open on the side of Papoose, right, and went in. I challenge anybody to find a road, a path, a dirt road, any disturbance in the soil any tire to anything heading south out of Area 51 towards Papoose Lake. Mm-hmm. Anything. There's nothing. You know what is out there and on the other side of the mountain going in the other direction of Area 51? Nuclear bomb craters. That's where they did all the nuclear testing. Yes. And it's got to be so radioactive. So those tests were going off in the 1950s, 1960s out there. So 10, 15, 20 years later, they're out there building, facilities for in the middle of a nuclear wasteland. It just feels funky to me.
Yeah, I read those claims as well. It's pretty insane because it seems like based off the dirt road, it is incredibly difficult to take just a casual bus there. It apparently would get practically demolished. And on a side note, thank you so much, good Tom King and Jazz Shaw, for your super chats. You guys are fantastic. And we have about 10 minutes left, and we're probably going to end up doing a part two of Bob Lazar. There's a lot of things that we haven't covered yet. Yep. But there's one thing I want to talk about before, if we still have time, and that's about with Bob Bigelow. Now, Bob Bigelow and Bob Lazar did have some kind of business for about 4 months where they worked together on something. And Bob Bigelow did an interview with George Knapp in 2021. It's on YouTube on the Mystery Wire. Everyone can watch it. Mm-hmm. And Knapp asked Bigelow, like, why did you have Lazar on? Like, why did you take him on as a business partner? And Bigelow, as we know who he is, he likes the mysterious, but he's also a skeptic in all of these things. So apparently, based off of what he said, what Bigelow said, he was definitely testing Lazar to see if his story was true and what his intentions really were. And he states that his gut feeling said that Bob Lazar was telling the truth and he wasn't doing it for money because, as many of us know, Bob Bigelow has a ton of money and he would actually attempt to bait Lazar with giving him a certain amount for working with him. But based off of what Bigelow said, Lazar wasn't interested in the money that he had. Instead, he just wanted to do whatever they had to do. And that his story was 100% true in his belief. It wasn't until later on when Bigelow was out of town that there were some things happening to the point where their business only lasted 4 months. And it said that that Bigelow got a call from one of his female office workers and said, "Did you know that Lazar is using your lab to be a furniture storage unit?" And from right then and right there, their partnership ended. But what I'm trying to get at is there are very few people that have admitted having encounters with Lazar, but one of them being a very renowned and credible person such as Bigelow. And he stated that he believes the story mainly from a gut feeling, but also from attempting to trap him into telling that the story isn't true. And I found that very interesting. Did you hear that story?
Yes. And it's all very interesting. And Bob Bigelow is a very smart guy. Don't get to where you are without not having intuition. I think that all of us, including myself, have always been taken by Bob's story, his delivery, his speech, and the way that I hate it when people go, "He's so well spoken," but Bob is well spoken, right? And I bought in just like millions of people did. And now where did things all start to go wrong? And I don't think Bob Bigelow should be, criticized or held accountable to this. Neither should I or anybody else that has an opinion on Bob Lazar. But how did all of this happen? I'm going to wrap this up with this. And I mean this because I think all of us to some degree have done what Bob did. And that is, you kind of sometimes just get all wrapped up in the moment, right? You get all wrapped up in the moment. And back then, when Bob made his statements about Los Alamos or MIT or Caltech, there wasn't an internet. There wasn't a way to go and verify somebody's claims. There wasn't any way to do this. You'd have to get on the phone. You'd have to send out snail mail. You'd have to wait for responses if you ever got a response back. There wasn't a way to do any of this. So if you're going to say, yeah, I went to Caltech, people pretty much had to take you at your word, because right. You're not going to be able to call Caltech and go, did so-and-so graduate there? We don't give that information out over the phone. Boom. And they're going to hang up, because they don't. They don't do that. They don't do it today. And to go and find somebody's PhD or something, go on the internet and try to see if somebody went to law school at a certain college, a friend of yours. You can't find it unless that there's something the school's not going to disclose. You need a court order. You need a writ from the Oval Office to get education information out of some school and somebody's background. And Bob knew this. Everybody knew this back then. So did Bob just get caught up in the moment where he says MIT, you know, and he says Caltech, and he's caught up in the moment and the emotion and the thing? He's got throngs of people coming at him and praising him, and they should be. He had a fantastic story. Did he just get caught up in the moment and get out over his head? I think that's probably what happened. And we've all done that from time to time, and that's okay. He never came clean about it. What he did do is he ran away. And the best way to avoid all of this from 1995 to 2020, don't give interviews. Don't talk to anybody anymore. Let it go. Hopefully the story's going to die down. Well, it didn't, but Bob just never addressed any of these issues. He ran away from it. Now this, you know, the twilight of somebody's life and things are way behind you in your rear view mirror. Why would Bob come and address these issues directly now? Who cares? Right. And that's where we are today. And I get it. And I understand it. And that's the logical way that I've always approached this. For me, it just caused me, Christina, just to take a step back and not stay all in. I'd want to lose my mind on this and go crazy. And I got tired of listening to people on both sides fight about Lazar. You guys do all of that on your own. I've given you my reasons why I supported Bob for 30 years and what that one little thing about the Element 115 raid, which wasn't true, is what made me just kind of back up, just kind of toss up my hands and say, you know what, I'm just going to have to let this one go. I'll let everybody else fight about it, but I'm no longer part of this game.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I would like to say thank you to Bottled Water once again. And it says, one final super chat for Christina, go get some good ramen. And for guys that don't know, I just made a new Twitter account called Ramen Around, which is dedicated to ramen. So follow that account because it's a lot of fun. And then thank you so much to Ryan P for the $10. Awesome. I mean, you guys, everyone's being so kind. And
you know what? Before we sign off, everybody kick down to the ramen fund. If somebody is in ramen land, they need your help. They need your help to buy more ramen. She's not asking for filet mignon land. This isn't lobster land. That's not where she's going. She's not even going Langostinos. No, we're talking about ramen noodles. And somebody that's got a Twitter account that says ramen in it, they need your help. Everybody help, Christina. Hey, what about... come on, light this up, everybody. I want to see this light up. I want to see it. How do I kick in? How do I kick in some? Can I throw down a couple hundred? How do
heck
I do?
Yeah. But Steve, it says contributing to Christina's ramen fund. Good show. Thank you.
How do I do it? How do I contribute?
You can just be a Patreon supporter, Jimmy.
I'll Patreon.
And the Zatil, have Bob got the time to work on it? Question
Have
mark?
Bob got the time to work on his
prediction? I don't know. But that is it for today's show. I think we're probably going to be doing a part two because there's a lot of information that we still need to cover.
Yeah.
And John, thank you so much for the super sticker. So we're going to wrap it up right here, right now. But before we do that, I kind of want to end it on this note before I do the outro. And kind of what Stanton Friedman said in one of his interviews when talking about Bob Lazar. And it says, sincerity is not a check on truth. And a lot of people say that Lazar has a lot of sincerity when he tells his story. But Stanton, knowing his standpoint that he takes, he says that it does not equal truth. So I would like to add.
If you remember, I said to Christina the other day, I said, Christina, Bob Lazar is the gift that keeps on giving. Right?
It is. But keep it because we have to end it today. And like I said, we're going to be doing a part two. We run out of time and it's going to be next Tuesday at 2:30 PST. Everyone, I am going to read his book and do more research for next week's show. Maybe I can get an extra guest on for next week for debate. You know, we can see, but no promises. That'll be really interesting. Michael Mataluni today is going to be interviewing Ross. Well,
you know,
Coulthard.
Ross Coulthard?
Yeah, interviewing him today, like right now.
Oh, we got to go. I got to catch up. Listen, I'll tell you what. We'll bring in next week Richard Dolan and nice. The three of us, because Richard, every time I'm with him, public and private, okay, church, let's fight about Bob Lazar. And we just go off. I've had dinners by Dolan and I sitting alone in a restaurant, 2 hours of Bob Lazar just slugging it out. Jeez. So we can you want to do Dolan? Want me to bring in Dolan?
Let's do it.
Are you guys down? Let me see it in the chat room. If everybody wants Dolan, throw Christina $2 for ramen. And let's see that light up, and I'll bring in Richard Dolan next week. Okay.
That would be awesome, because it's good to have multiple standpoints, different perspectives on the story.
Even though Dolan is wrong, it's even though Dolan is wrong. Okay, let's get over to Ross. Everybody,
yes.
Thank you so much. And it was a great conversation today. I'm very it reminds me of, and I know we got to go, when Stanton would start talking about Bob, what happened to him, and his voice would get louder and louder, and he just, you know, it was crazy. And sometimes I find myself doing the same thing. I'm all calm now. Let's go see that for now.
That's going to change. Fast Eddie, thank you so much. You're awesome. But yeah, like I said, we're really going to close it here. So Michael Mataluni's having him literally right now, Ross Coulthard. So I put the link in the chat if you guys want to go to it. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for the super chats. Awesome audience. Thanks to all my moderators. You guys have been seriously fantastic. And all my Patreon supporters, which now apparently Jimmy's going to be one. Thank you so much, Jimmy. Friday on Shifting the Paradigm, I will be interviewing my coworker at The Debrief, Chrissy Newton. Then bookmark for next Tuesday, the Bob Lazar Claims Part 2. Go check out Michael Mataluni's show right now. Have a great evening, everyone. And remember to keep your eyes on the skies.